at state licensed facilities, and a DHS background study of Relator revealed this guilty plea to the felony level controlled substance defense. Under the Background Study Act, when that guilty plea was revealed by statute, there's a 15-year disqualification period. Relator sought reconsideration of that to the DOC, and in his request for reconsideration, he did not challenge the correctness of the disqualification, but asserted he did not pose a risk of harm to the children and youth served by the DOC licensed facility. The DOC reviewed Relator's request for reconsideration and determined that he failed to present sufficient evidence to demonstrate he did not pose a risk of harm to the children and youth served, and specifically, the DOC gave preeminent weight to the fact that an insufficient time had elapsed since the same or similar event. After considering all of the relevant factors, the DOC noted, and when I say the DOC, obviously I'm referring to the DOC's designee or the deputy commissioner in this case, that Relator at the time of his request remained on probation. He had a previous probation violation with the DWI offense. His relapse, he had a relapse only 8 months prior to his request on methadone, and he only completed treatment 6 months prior to the request. And those facts are demonstrated in the record at Exhibit 1, which is the memorandum regarding the reconsideration request for the deputy commissioner. Exhibits 4 and 5 are the risk of harm assessment forms by the commissioner designee. And Exhibit 9 is the memorandum from Relator's probation officer.
Could I ask you, because there's a complaint also in this matter, that the 15-year disqualification period is arbitrary and capricious, particularly in light of the fact that this that the realtor here has completed treatment, and he apparently has been there's been no relapse for the 8 months. I mean, why is it necessary for a 15-year period to be imposed here of disqualification?
You're aware the 15-year disqualification is explicit in the statute, and it's for obviously Relator is focused on marijuana related offenses. It's for felony level related offenses. So generally that was a decision that was made by the legislature in terms of time, and I think notably all of the factors that you just listed there all go to a distinct issue, which is the set-aside factors of 245C.22. And so where the conflation I think is coming in here is there's a statutory standard for the disqualification, and then there's a separate statutory criteria for the set-aside, and those are two distinct things. Is that responsive to your question, Judge?
So it's statutory, in other words, it's a mandatory disqualification according to statute without any room for discretionary modification? Is that what you're claiming?
Well, the discretion comes in terms of the set-aside and the set-aside factors. So the disqualification, yes, is required by statute, and there was no discretion or independent judgment that the deputy commissioner had to make in analyzing that. He could just see that there was a guilty plea, and that was sufficient under the statute. But there is some discretion in analyzing the set-aside factors.
And let's address that. In terms of the discretionary factors, why is it not an abuse of discretion to look at this situation and say there's no need for, I mean, it has to be 15 years?
So the set-aside would allow, the disqualification would still remain in place even if it was set aside. The set-aside would be specific to the licensed facility that he was working at. So in this case, if the deputy commissioner granted the set-aside, it would be specific to Prairie Lakes, and he would be able to work at that facility. In the context of the previous question of the standard of review, this court has said that it enjoys a presumption of correctness and that, agency decision makers are to be given deference by this court. However, the statute itself says that any single factor can be determinative. Counsel conceded that many of the factors here, or most, I think, is what he said, are irrelevant. The factor, though, that clearly got preeminent weight here had nothing to do with the letters that were submitted and that council cites in support of Relator, which is that there were many letters that were submitted and considered by the deputy commissioner that suggested that Relator was very good at his job performance. However, they did not go to that issue that the commissioner gave preeminent weight, which is the issue of the time that had elapsed, meaning that there was only 6 months' time since he had completed treatment and 8 months' time since he had the relapse on methadone. So really the issue as it pertains to the set-aside or the risk of harm factors had nothing to do with marijuana. In fact, it had to do with the whole separate relapse of a separate drug. And that's where, again, I think the relator is conflating issues.
Well, why is relator incorrect that he should have received an evidentiary hearing?
So the two issues as articulated in Relator's principal brief were, one, that he procedural due process mandated that Relator should get a hearing on his disqualification specifically. And, of course, as a part of that brief, Relator didn't even cite the fair hearing statute that was clarified on the reply. However, the statute is very clear that Relator does not get a hearing under those circumstances. And the case law also makes clear that when there is the full panoply of rights, this is the Sweet case, are afforded to somebody through the criminal process, then there's no need for a hearing. So this court has upheld the statute in that context. The second issue was just the weight of the evidence with respect to the set-aside. Of course, Relator characterized that as there was insufficient evidence to support the disqualification, but in the principal brief, or in Relator's principal brief, he only referred to the set-aside factors, so that's what was addressed in the DOC's response. And I think we already addressed that, you know, specifically preeminent weight was given to one factor, as is allowed under the statute, and that was the time that had elapsed since Relator's relapse and completion of treatment. Going to each of the Matthews factors, not trying to be duplicative here with the time I have left, but just to make sure that I cover them all, this court found in Sweet, under substantially similar circumstances, that Relator did have a property interest in pursuing employment in the public sector, and that was clear. However, the court noted that it's less restricted in the circumstances when they can pursue employment in a private sector. And as I previously indicated, and what I believe to be the most important factor on behalf of the DOC, is that the risk of an erroneous deprivation of Relator's rights in pursuing this public employment, his interest in that, there is very little risk in that he was afforded the full panoply of rights in the criminal process. And Sweet upheld that when that happens, there's little risk of an erroneous deprivation.
What was the nature of the, there was a conviction in Sweet?
The conviction in Sweet was a criminal sexual conduct. So it is distinguishable in that regard. Okay.
How old is the 15 year and the marijuana categorization? What are we dealing with here? This is a determination that's been made some years ago?
I believe it's been in place some time just by my reference to the case law that's cited in the briefs, Your Honor. However, I should note that the statute cites felony-level controlled substance offenses generally. It's not specific to marijuana. So all felony-level controlled substance offense would presumably qualify under 245C.15.
And there's a 15-year for that category.
And that would be 15-year disqualification for state-licensed facilities.
That's right. Has there ever... I'm sorry.
Maybe you're going to ask the question.
Has anyone in state government revisited this whole process as it relates to marijuana?
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. I couldn't say. I believe that one of the cases did involve Well, the Thompson case involved felony-level controlled substance crimes. I'm not sure if that related to marijuana. I don't know if that's responsive to your question. Obviously, the issue with that in that case was that they didn't get a hearing. It was a preponderance finding. It wasn't a guilty plea. So in that case, the court found specifically because of the fact that you actually didn't get the full panoply of rights in that criminal proceeding, we find that you should get them now.
Is there any mechanism in place under the statutes for a modification of that 15-year disqualification period?
I'm not aware here, and notably, obviously, realtors not challenging the correctness of the disqualification. I'm not sure if there would be some other remedy for him other than what's already in place in the set-aside. So obviously, the set-aside is in place to allow individuals who are disqualified to work at the specific state licensed facility.
So the set
aside,
sort of becomes the opportunity to ameliorate the harshness of the statute.
I think that would be a reasonable way to put it, to allow the realtor, to the extent that they can demonstrate that they're not a risk of harm to the individual served, the vulnerable individual served by the state licensed facility. That is the realtor's burden, though. Counsel indicates that there's some sort of statutory burden shifting scheme. The statute doesn't make any mention of a burden shifting scheme. The burden to establish that is always put on realtor, and it is in the discretion of the agency decision maker to grant that. I believe we covered a lot of the issues here today. I want to make one final note. I think counsel makes a lot of, or realtor, policy-related arguments related to marijuana-related offenses. Generally, we talk about those in the context of the disqualification statute. However, generally speaking, those policy discussions, as this court's aware, are best suited with the Minnesota legislature and not appropriately within the scope of this appeal. So we'd ask that the DOC would ask this court to affirm its determination, and unless there's any other questions, I think I've covered all the topics.
Well, and if I understand your position correctly, if in fact the commissioner decides that the realtor was subject to a 15-year disqualification, and then there's a motion made to reconsider it and set it aside, that once that motion is lost, then there is no further opportunity by the realtor to come back.
I don't know. I think the statute is ambiguous about the ability to, and I haven't done enough research because obviously it wasn't briefed here, but I don't think it's the DOC's affirmative position that they would never be able to come back at any time and seek a set aside, presuming that the time, you know, this particular factor is obviously the time that had elapsed from a particular set of conduct to the time of the request, and that's what's before the court here today. I don't think the DOC would take a position here today, it certainly wasn't briefed as to whether or not they could come back at some later date to seek a set aside again.
I mean, because we're talking about addiction issues, and I'm sure they arise in every, in many, many employment situations. But there are people that go through treatment and they stay clean for a considerable period of time, and it would seem, you know, that there should be an opportunity for them to come back. And I mean, and I guess that's what I'm asking is, under, does this take into account that they would be able to do that? Because as I read this decision, the big thing that made this high risk is he hadn't worked there that long, so they really didn't, you know, they didn't have this, you know, years and years of employment to base the decision upon, but also that he had just recently relapsed, and that was a big point, that it's been within the last 8 months prior that he had relapsed, and he just recently completed his treatment. Does that mean, and I guess in our consideration, does that mean he's out of this kind of work forever? I mean, 15 years is pretty much knocking him out of the field, isn't it?
Well, 245C22 is silent on the issue of whether or not he would be able to come back. And again, it was a brief, so I apologize that I don't have a real direct answer. Obviously, what's before the court today is the decision that was made at that. that time.
Well, it would seem, it would seem to me that when the decision is so much based upon the shortness of time here, that it would be reasonable to revisit that item since these other items aren't, appear not to be very critical.
The logic makes sense. I just haven't briefed it because obviously it's not really right on point before the court. So I apologize, Your Honors, but thank you for
Thank you, Mr. Forrest. And now we'll go back to you, Mr. Mack, for any rebuttal.
To your question about the legislature, Judge Kopaki, I've recently made the argument before Judge Hansen that the marijuana prohibition of MS-15202 has been repealed by implication by MS-15222-32. And the basis for that is that marijuana is classified as a number one drug that has no medical use, whereas 15222-32 explicitly say that it does. The point that I'm trying to make is that our marijuana laws in regard to disqualification haven't caught up with what the legislature has done in other fields. I should note that I made a letter indication to the Attorney General that I thought that the statute in its present form is unconstitutional. I thought that it was unconstitutional because of extreme disproportionality, the 15-year disqualification. Judge Hooten, I think it's kind of important to recognize the difference between a disqualification and a set-aside. A disqualification is 15 years, and as I read the statute, it's actually one bite at the apple, this one. A set-aside can be to a specific unit at any time. But there's no indication, for example, that you have an automatic right to a set-aside, and if you try to get another job, even though you had it set aside in a previous job, you have to go through the whole process again. Let's go through the factors that we were talking about in Sweet. The commissioner now says that the most important of the factors weighing against my client was the time elapsed. The problem is, especially with marijuana, what would be a reasonable time? Is there any kind of thing in either the statute or the commissioner's regulations that speak to elapsed time? I submit there is not.
Can I ask you, because I just want to summarize, and I want you to tell me how this is wrong, but if I look at the commissioner's opinion, and I'm going to kind of paraphrase, but it looks like he's saying, well, his conduct in using marijuana was intentionally neglectful, that he's dealing with somewhat vulnerable clients, that he hasn't been working there that long, and that he's had a relapse from being on probation and being under treatment, and he's just recently completed the treatment. And that he didn't have a lot of, you know, that he had some insight, but not a great deal of insight. He only accepted some responsibility as evidenced by his relapse. And in looking at that and looking and taking those facts together, that weighing that he should be disqualified. How can we find that analysis is arbitrary and capricious?
Several things about the analysis. First of all, the indication of risk of reoffense is low. The most important, though, is that we go back to safety. As the cases have said, we have to look at all eight factors, but by and away, the most important is safety. And where you have some indication, including from the commissioner himself, that there is not a danger to his charges, then we have to consider, is there any other evidence showing that the fact that this man had a marijuana plant growing in his backyard is going to cause him to be a danger to his clients? And there's absolutely no evidence.
Well, he was also a user, though. I mean, he not only was growing the marijuana in his yard, but he was a user of marijuana, is it unreasonable for the commissioner to want the people working with these juveniles to not be high on drugs? I mean...
But there is no indication that at any day on the job or at any time he had been on campus that he was high on marijuana or anything else. And I'm quite sure that the three people who gave him the glowing reports, if they had any indication that he was working with his clients while high, they wouldn't have written those reports.
But is it enough that they know that he does have a problem?
Is that he's had a problem and he's overcome it because he's off probation and he has successfully completed treatment.
But then that gets into the questioning about that we did of the respondent here. He just had a relapse, and there's not really been enough time here for so I think there may be a timing issue here too.
But the problem is you have a 15-year automatic non-renewable disqualification, except as we do here. So what would be a reasonable time? And it seems to me that you may need some expert testimony on that. For example, we know with methamphetamine, which is much, much worse, it takes about 2 to 3 years to get that out of your system because it changes the brain. No such evidence with regard to marijuana. Thank you.
Thank you to both parties for appearing by ITV and supplementing the briefs with the argument. The matter is taken under advisement, and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame. That concludes our hearing. We are adjourned.